This episode was recorded in late June 2019, when the NGO rescue ship Sea-Watch was still blocked. Since then, a lot has happened on that story, so keep that in mind when you're listening. If you'd like to know more about what happened to that story, look out for some more information about it in our newsletter coming out this Friday. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to a new episode of Libya Matters. Today, we'll be talking about migration, debunking the official narrative in a relaxed and engaging chat on the topic, with some interesting stats and facts and real solutions on why migration is not a crisis, but rather a phenomenon. Joining us today is an expert on the topic, Matteo De Baris, Amnesty International's researcher on European migration policy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Marwa.
Hi.
Here we are again.
Yes.
How are we feeling today? What's on our mind?
Good. Lots has been happening on Libya. Have you been following what's been going on with...
No. Yes. happening with what?
With this... with the rescue boat.
The Sea-Watch.
I think right before we came in here, I left that they're still kind of at a standoff.
It's such a fascinating story because, so you have clear villains and clear heroes in the story. So you have this.
The lines are blurred. I wouldn't say today you have clear villains. And I mean, if
my mind, villain, Salvini, hero, captain.
Well, the world today is actually, you know, the captain is the villain today. And this is not the first example, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you've seen so many other rescue workers who have been tried or charged with in the US and in Greece, I think one of them was. And so,
shall we explain the story?
Go ahead.
Oh, gosh, I'll try. Okay. So Sea-Watch 3 is it a German boat? And they have rescued some people who were in the water from Libya, about 45, I think, and they've been denied the ability to dock anywhere. And there's been a court ruling that prevents them from doing that. And this, fantastically eloquent captain who's steering the boat is decided she's going to dock or she's heading towards Italy regardless of this ruling.
So there was a decree by the Italian government that would fine rescue boats 50,000 euros and then also with possible impounding of their ship, I think. And so this captain is defying that decree. And is trying to disembark in Italy. However, with that being said, we do have our expert here who can give insight into this and many other things on the Europe migration. With us today is Matteo De Baris. He is the Amnesty International researcher on migration, on European migration.
And he's already added value because he's corrected me to say that the Sea-Watch is actually Dutch and not German. So mm-hmm. I feel like I've already learned something. Welcome, Matteo.
Thanks a lot for the invitation.
Thank you, Matteo. Just picking up on this conversation, what is your... this is obviously one small example of a larger problematic policies in the Central Mediterranean at the moment. So I'd be keen to hear what your take is on this particular case, on the Sea-Watch.
The Sea-Watch 3 case that is still developing as we speak is a clear example of the criminalization that is being used by European governments, and in particular, I would say, especially in this case, by the Italian authorities, to get rid of the NGOs that are rescuing people in the central Mediterranean. This has been going on for several months at least, over a year in fact, with the new Italian government that in fact started in June 2018, continuing the policies of the previous government, but also taking them forward much more aggressively, in particular on the point of criminalizing the NGOs who are that are rescuing people in the central Mediterranean. So in this case, we are seeing, as in many other previous cases, an NGO rescuing people at sea, in international waters, and being told that they need to liaise with the Libyan authorities with the clear intention of having the NGO disembarking the people rescued at sea in Libya. But we know that Libya is not to be considered as a place of safety, as a safe port where you can disembark people rescued at sea, confident that their rights will be respected. Instead, we know very well that people disembarked in Libya are then transferred to detention centers where they are subjected to arbitrary detention, torture in various forms, exploitation. So this is the reason why the NGOs are being criminalized. The fact that European governments don't want, in fact, NGOs to operate at sea, because the NGOs will comply with their obligation, with the prohibition to disembark people in Libya. They will not disembark people in Libya. And so they are spoiling a little bit the party of the European governments that have an entirely different strategy. The strategy is that the Libyan Coast Guard, the Libyan maritime authorities have to intercept people on boats in the central Mediterranean and disembark them in Libya. NGOs cannot do that because it's illegal. So how do you disrupt NGOs? They couldn't stop them from acting in international waters, so they started criminalizing them, including by approving decrees of the kind that you have just mentioned, that increase the kind of penalties that are imposed on NGOs. But then we have to see, in case there will be a prosecution and in particular a trial, whether the judges will what the judges will say, because we are entirely confident that the NGOs are operating within the rules, within the boundaries of the international law that applies in these cases.
This is not the first time, right? And I think that what we've seen is, what's interesting is that we see more aggressive steps that are being taken. And maybe we should step back a little into the peak of all of this, right? And in terms of the movement and why it is so problematic when it comes to Libya. So in 2015 and 2016 is when we saw larger numbers of departures from Libya to Europe. And then following that, we've seen these policies then that take place essentially aim to stop this movement and then have them trapped inside of Libya ultimately. And I think one of the things that is important to point out is that, and maybe Matteo, you want to comment on this as well, training training a coast guard within itself is not the problem, right? And in fact, coast guards can actually save lives in rescue operations. And I think that what's so problematic with the situation in Libya is that the training of the coast guard comes at the cost of many other, at the cost of human rights, knowing very well that those that are intercepted and brought back to Libya are placed in detention centers. So if we can kind of discuss, I think, a bit more around why the training of the Coast Guard is most problematic.
If you allow me, I will take a step back very quickly to speak for 1 minute about the history of this, because it's very important that we understand also the precedents of the cooperation between European governments and Libya on migration in particular. So in 2008 already, the Italian and Libyan authorities, at the time headed by Berlusconi and Gaddafi, signed an agreement on many things, but this included also an agreement on migration control that had the same objective of containing refugees and migrants in Libya. At the time, part of the actions that were being planned and then implemented in the couple of years that followed included in particular pushbacks by Italian authorities. So Italian vessels were, in 2009 and 10, stopped at sea a number of migrant boats and returned them to the Libyan ports. In 2012, in a seminal judgment of the European Court of Human Rights, which is called HIRSI, the European Court said, no, you can't do that. This is an action that entails, in fact, a violation of the prohibition of torture. It was a very serious judgment that, without hesitation, condemned Italy for the policy that they had set up. In the following years, Italy, with a different government, decided to invest more on rescuing people at sea and disembark them in Italy, because they couldn't disembark them in Libya as a result, in fact, of that judgment. What happened? That again, due to the changed political climate, in 2016, another Italian government decided to go back to the same plan that, in fact, the Berlusconi government and Gaddafi had agreed to contain refugees and migrants in Libya. But they couldn't do it in the same way, because the Italian authorities cannot anymore intercept people at sea and return them to Libya because of that judgment that condemned Italy. So they thought they were very clever. They created a trick. They said, okay, we go and give ships to the Libyan Coast Guard, we give them training, we give them all the coordination and the support they need, and then they will do the dirty work of intercepting people at sea and returning them on to Libya, and we can go away thinking that our hands are clean.
Outsourcing of the problem, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's like, a way of framing it. They were outsourcing the control of the Central Mediterranean to the Libyan authorities to ensure that any migrant or refugee at risk at the sea would be not rescued, in fact, by civilian vessels or European military vessels, but instead intercepted by the Libyans and taken back to Libya.
Pulled in instead of pushed back, but effectively the same result.
Exactly. Exactly. So this is why we consider that in this specific case, the training of a Coast Guard, going back to the question you were posing, is problematic, and why any other form of cooperation that is being offered to the Libyan authorities on this issue is problematic. Because the Italians in particular, but the European governments and institutions in general, have engaged in this cooperation, have offered these tools with the clear objective of having people disembarked in Libya without thinking for a second about the consequences on the men, women, children who are being picked up at sea by the Libyan authorities.
Just wanted to add some sort of Libyan legal color on this, because in addition to the fact, and I'm sure Marwa, you will mention this as well, in addition to the fact that like Libya doesn't have an asylum framework, that there is no law that recognizes any status for people that would protect them once they arrive in Libya. Actually, around this 2016 deal, I think we saw a really interesting case law in Libya around the legitimacy of that agreement or the legality of that agreement, where we had a Libyan court find that the 2016 agreement was illegal. But so there's two reasons. There's the kind of main reason, which is a technical one around the sovereignty of a transitional government to enter into that kind of permanent arrangement, which is technical and frankly quite boring. But but the more interesting statement I thought was in the opinion of the judges. One of the explanations they gave as to why this setup would be problematic anyway was effectively declaring that Libya is not safe for migrants, for the reasons that we all talk about, right? The kind of the detention centers, the status of those centers. But also on a really interesting note, that Libya is by nature a xenophobic country, and therefore they would not welcome, it is not a welcoming country for migrants at the best of times, let alone in a conflict, which I find that really fascinating for a court to say in a judgment that the people in that country would not know how to host people that look different to them. But I think it's worth picking up on that as we think of some of the violations we see, which do have, in addition to, you know, the human rights violations we know, but they do have a particularly racist element to them. And I think it's worth just, for me, I always find that really fascinating that you have a judge saying, in addition to everything else, because the majority of people that are brought back are Africans and Black Africans, then therefore they would face even more severe sort of conditions in Libya than other people would. So I always find that a really fascinating kind of take on the problem that also gets overlooked, that, you know, we have this legal problem, we have this structure, but we also have an incredibly hostile environment for people in the current situation in Libya, full stop.
That's certainly a very interesting element, and that's consistent with what I'm being told when I speak with refugees and migrants, because as part of my job, I routinely interview refugees and migrants who have attempted the journey at sea, and in most cases who have arrived, in fact, in Europe. It's very clear to me from all the testimonies we have collected that racism is a key part of the reasons why people are treated as they are in Libya. Black people from sub-Saharan Africa very often telling us about not only the human rights violations they have suffered in the detention centers at the hands of officials, but also abuses that they are routinely exposed to when walking in the street and being robbed by kids, when going to work and not being paid for the work, but instead being exploited in a variety, really, of ways. And the fear that this generates on people is something that is really coming out clearly from the interviews. And it's very sad, because clearly I think about the tens or hundreds of thousands of people who are currently in that situation right now.
Going back to the question of the pushback, given just to, I think that what we need to do is really reiterate how problematic the training of the Libyan Coast Guard is in a situation. Well, I mean, it is quite, I find, quite ironic that in any international policy on Libya, it's ruled out as a failed state, and with institutions that are broken. However, they managed to bring out and train and establish an institution that is very convenient in ensuring that no one makes it across to Europe. So it is the one institution that has proven successful in surviving the situation in Libya. But what makes it very problematic, of course, I would say, is the situation of returning people to a country where there is no asylum framework, where we know that they are placed in detention centers, and there really is no shortage of reports and testimonies that have come out on the atrocities that happen inside these detention centers. The fact that there is no judicial oversight over these, it is essentially an illegal detention. And knowing all of these, and besides detention, the situation inside is very problematic for refugees and migrants alike. Walking around in the streets, like you said, Mateo, getting picked up. There's armed groups and gangs that capture individuals and exploit them under torture for financial gains. Knowing all of this, there has been an irresponsible approach in training the Libyan Coast Guard without looking at improving the situation on the ground. first. And the kind of the explanation that Libya is a failed state or Libya it's difficult just doesn't fly with me, because again there's been agreement signed and enforced despite the judiciary. I mean, I think it's irresponsible on so many fronts, because it has undermined the Libyan judiciary, undermined the Libyan state, and at the same time undermining the human rights situation in the country.
I agree with you. And I would even say it's not just irresponsible, it's illegal, because under international law, I will spare you the details of Article 16, but under international law, it is adamant that cooperation with another country cannot be done in all cases, whatever, in any way you want. And in particular, you cannot become complicit in the commission of human rights violations by another state by offering to that state tools that you know will be used to commit those human rights violations. So European governments and institutions have been knowledgeable about the treatment of refugees and migrants in Libya for a decade or more. They knew what was happening in those detention centers before. For years, this has been documented by the UN, by Amnesty International, by Human Rights Watch, by everyone. However, they decided to offer this cooperation without asking the Libyan authorities, as a condition for that cooperation, to stop committing those human rights violations. They should have said, okay, we want to help you, but first you need to close the detention centers. You need to ensure that people who have protection needs enjoy some form of asylum.
But Libya is especially attractive because it has the detention centers and because it sort of keeps them very firmly away from Europe. So I think it's, you know, it's not just a, I think it, if I had a bingo card for the conversation, then complicit would be one of the words we'd have to find, because I think for me that is really at the crux of what this situation is, right? Libya is an attractive partner because it doesn't play by the rules, by the international rules, and therefore it can do all the dirty work. And for me, I find, you know, for us at LFGL, like we're working towards so much, like trying to establish the rule of law in Libya. But this is the perfect example where you have a situation which is illegal at the international level, illegal, I'm sure, if tested at the Italian level, illegal at the Libyan level. Yet the international community is happy to go along with it because it's politically expedient to do so. And we see that over and over and over and over again. And certainly when I've been in rooms with policymakers, and this is something I'd really like your take on, whenever we've pushed them on this, saying, yes, but you know, the human rights situation is terrible. People are being abused and are dying. And you know, you've seen the numbers, you've seen the fact this is not a surprise. The response I always give was like, yes, but we're doing our part with our train and equip programs. So we're training them on human rights. We're training them on what they should be doing. And then for me, a real kind of slap and revelation was when there was a recent an access to information request on the manuals that are produced by the EU to train and equip the Libyan Coast Guard. And it was found that human rights training amounts to 0.5% of the entire training. And actually it comes down to one PowerPoint slide and that's it. The rest is all practical, logistical, how you capture people and bring them back training. And so for that to be given to us as the response, no, but we are training them on human rights. And then we realize that the training is 0.5% of the entire training that time spent, then there must be something we can do to follow up on this with the European actors. Because, you know, I think we're trying to look forward and be positive to find a solution-based approach to this. But for me, at the crux of it is to say to the Europeans, get your act together. This is really unacceptable.
I couldn't agree more, and maybe we can discuss the possible solutions, but first I would like to comment on what you were saying. Certainly that slide on the training on human rights is a fig's leaf, nothing more than that. But even if it was 10,000 pages and the training was only on human rights, that is not enough, because you cannot expect state authorities to respect human rights only because you have trained them. You need accountability for the human rights violations. And we all know that accountability is just not happening. Impunity in Libya in this moment is widespread. And as long as this continues to be the case, we can train officials in Libya as much as we want, but we cannot expect them to abide to international human rights law standards.
There's the illegality, but I can't reiterate this enough. I really do find that the undermining these policies not only have the massive human rights violations, or the consequences of in massive human rights violations, but they're also very irresponsible in undermining a state that is trying to rebuild by again, ignoring the judiciary, ignoring, overstepping. I mean, I'm with all due respect, but the fact that the Italians are bringing in tribal leaders and municipal leaders and overstepping the central the central authorities of a state, is very problematic. And so that is all contributes to a destabilization of an already bad situation in the country. And so it really does then become a migration becomes a very problematic policy and the driving force of European policy in many ways in Libya. But now that we've kind of fleshed all that out, we do hear a lot that, well, you know, Libya is in a state of war. That it's an ongoing conflict. It's a difficult situation. There is no rule of law. How else are we meant to approach this? And I think that this is the question and the response that we constantly get when raising these our concerns at the European level, and I think on overall, even with the Libyans, and I think that there are concrete steps that can be taken even within this current context that could improve the situation, be responsible and legal, and ensure the protection of human rights of the refugees and migrants at its core, and the Libyan population as well. So what are your thoughts on that, Matteo?
Of course, no one denies that the situation in Libya is very complex, but precisely because it is complex, we need, first of all, an informed debate. That is not a debate like at the coffee shop where with ministers shouting every morning whatever crosses their mind. We have in this moment, unfortunately, a very negative narrative being spread in different countries, particularly in Europe, about migration, which is not informed by reality. I constantly have to tell my friends, for example, in Italy, that Italy is not being flooded by migrants. If you look at the numbers, it's not true that Italy is the only country receiving migrants. Spain last year received double the number. Greece keeps receiving migrants. Many European governments are confronting the challenges of migration. It is not a problem, it's a phenomenon, and we need to see it as it is and confront it with policies that make sense. But as long as we have a debate where who shouts louder dominates, then we will not find solutions. Then if we are serious and want to look at solutions, we have to look at the situation in Libya and try, as you were saying, Marwa, to identify the realistic step forwards that can be taken. One is to stop contaminating the very difficult political dynamics within the country for reconciliation, for moving forward, for accountability, with elements that have nothing to do with the real problems that the country is facing. So if Europe comes in and tells Libya that the priority is migration, then you're not helping Libya. If different European governments come in I will not name names, Italy and France. And they come in and give different priorities, and they are one day friend of one and the day after friend of the other one. They are not helping finding the solution in Libya for the Libyans and for the migrants and for everyone. Then if you want to get concrete on the situation of refugees and migrants, there is a number of measures that need to be taken. First of all, the detention centers need to be closed. There is no meaning, legally or politically, no reason why the detention centers need to remain in place. There are, the number changes a little bit, but normally about 5,000-6,000 refugees and migrants held in the detention centers. It's not an immense number, and in fact is a small proportion of the number of migrants and refugees in the country, so it doesn't even make sense. Why are you placing people intercepted at sea in those detention centers? Maybe it's just to punish people who have attempted the crossing, but that's not a tenable reason. So close the detention centers should be a realistic step. That should be a real priority for anyone offering cooperation to the Libyan authorities. And second, have a look at the situation of refugees, people in need of international protection, because many people who have gone to Libya have gone there because they were fleeing conflicts or persecution in the countries of origin. These people need to have access to asylum somewhere. If for the time being it's not going to be possible to offer them asylum in Libya, then through the services of UNHCR, European and other countries could resettle, this is the term used technically, which means transfer those people to other countries and offer them protection. We're talking about 60,000 refugees, roughly, in Libya. It's not an immense number. If different countries come together and decide to cooperate properly, imagine in Europe there are over 500 million people living in Europe. What's the huge challenge in resettling 50,000 people, 60,000 people? It wouldn't be an enormous challenge if they wanted. And then European governments need to sort out their own differences, not just on this, but also on how they regulate the asylum and other matters within Europe. Because we are seeing, and we go back, for example, to the recent case of the Sea-Watch 3 you were mentioning at the beginning of this chat, we're seeing different European governments treating men, women, and children as hot potatoes at sea and saying, no, I don't want them, you get them. No, you have a responsibility. No, you have a responsibility. All this is generated, in fact, by a regulation within the European Union, the so-called asylum system, the so-called Dublin system, sorry, which says basically that if you set foot for the first time as an asylum seeker in a specific European Union member state, then that state will be responsible for providing you asylum in the long term. This is seen legitimately by southern European countries as penalizing them. They have responded for some time playing tricks like not fingerprinting people, and this is the threat that the Italian Minister of Interior Salvini is making now. You don't fingerprint people, so if they go to Germany or the Netherlands, no one will know they have entered Europe via Italy. But this is kids playing at the garden. This is not serious policy making. They need to sit down together and find a solution that passes through the redistribution of asylum seekers who are rescued at sea in different European governments. It's possible, it's feasible, they just need to do it.
That sounds so achievable and positive. So let me dampen this excitement a little bit, because what we're also seeing in Europe is obviously a massive shift to the right. So it's, you know, it's not, if this kind of thinking was coinciding with a move in European elections towards more progressive governments, then there is momentum to do that. But if anything, what we're seeing in election after election are Salvini-esque type people being elected across the continent. and you know, we're in London at the moment, and we know who's going to be next as our prime minister and what his views on migration are. And so what I would be really, we were talking about this earlier, right? Is it the elections that's driving the migration policy, or is it migration that's driving the elections in Europe?
My personal take is that the importance of migration in the decisions is being overemphasized a little bit. The point is that migration has been treated by media as a crisis topic for a number of years, and politicians have used it in order to foster agendas that they thought could help them achieve results in terms of political gains, not real life gains. And the media have generated this idea that we have been confronting a crisis all the time, all the time, all the time. This is not the reality. If you look at the numbers of people crossing the Mediterranean, it's not a crisis. The crisis is the people dying at sea, dying in the desert, suffering in detention centers, suffering in the different North African countries, not just in Libya, for the abuses they are exposed to. Maybe we need audiences, people in Europe, to become a little bit more exposed to the realities of what's happening, but also to understand that migration, as I was saying before, is a phenomenon. Migrants can have, and they have in fact, carry very positive contributions to societies when they settle in. And we should be careful about being tricked by politicians to fall into agendas that they have designed. There is a lot of people in Europe feeling unhappy about the political situation in the UK, in Italy, in France. We're seeing it in a lot of countries. And this unhappiness is coming from much before, in fact. I'm reading a book now that argues that it's entrenched in the development of democracy in the long term. That it is rooted in a number of phenomena that we have seen in the last decades, not just in the last 5 years. Financial crisis, increasing inequality, and all the rest. Blaming migration for everything is just a trick.
And it's not in isolation, yeah, that migration comes out of nowhere. I mean, like you said, it is something that it's not a crisis, but the sentiment is a cumulative of other aspects. There's no shortage of reports, of accounts, of stories, of what's happening at sea, inside the detention centers in Libya, and even, you know, what happens when they arrive in Europe. There is a lot of media around this, and I think that has kind of been used as the counter narrative to fuel a mobilization against the policies that are against human rights and the protection of people and individuals. That's not working. And I think that there is a larger, there is a very strong narrative, like you said, Matteo, that there is a crisis, that people are flooding the shores of Europe. How do we counter this narrative, I would say?
Can I turn this into a little game? Mm-hmm. If we throw at you a statement or a narrative kind of push or an EU kind of excuse or whatever that's given, and we try to dispel it so that we can help change this narrative right here, right now. Let's try. Let's do this. So my first one, you think of the next one. My first one is actually EU policy has worked because fewer migrants are dying at sea. So why are you so critical?
Well, In fact, we don't know how many migrants are dying at sea, because without rescue ships in the central Mediterranean, it's very difficult to calculate how many people are dying. But even if it's true, we are exchanging 2,000-3,000 lives saved with 50,000-60,000 people being exposed to torture. This is not the kind of game we should be playing.
But a lot of these migrants are terrorists that are going to come and hurt our people in Europe.
Sorry, this makes me laugh.
You're a terrorist sympathizer, Matteo.
No, definitely not. But I meet the people who travel, contrary to many of the people who make these arguments. I spend time with refugees and migrants who tell me about the stories. And in fact, you wouldn't believe how many of them have escaped from terrorism, how many of them have been displaced by conflicts of various natures in different countries. And the fact that terrorists may be using those ships and endanger themselves so much in order to arrive in Europe, when they certainly can access Europe through false documentation and other means, is pretty ludicrous to me. Even if that has happened, those who have calculated the chances have found a number which is just 0.00001% of the people who are traveling. It's something like that.
But we're offering resettlement slots for those that truly deserve to be brought over.
Well, not enough, and very few indeed. Since I think in the past year or so, probably 3,000 people, something in that region, have been resettled out of Libya. Not more than that. As I was saying before, there are about 60,000 refugees in Libya. That means we need 20 years only to resettle the people who are currently in Libya. I mean, only the refugees, those refugees who have been. It doesn't make sense. How many human rights abuses we want to witness in those 20 years? It doesn't make sense at all. We need a stronger investment, a feasible investment. I'm not calling for opening borders altogether and having everyone coming whenever they want. I'm talking about using the systems that are in place, resettlement, for example, but allow more people to benefit of them. If we had 5,000 people for each European country in 1 year, we would address largely the situation of refugees in Libya.
But you'll cause a pull factor.
Not if you have a similar system in the different countries. And this is something on which UNHCR is working, having resettlement being offered also in other countries, and especially south of Libya, so that people do not go to Libya. Because no one wants, in fact, refugees or migrants, or is suggesting that refugees and migrants should go to Libya by any means.
I mean, you know, the left keeps conflating migrants and refugees. These are economic migrants who are coming to use our resources. Do not tell us they're refugees.
You know, there are refugees and there are migrants. People migrate for many different reasons. And it's absolutely true that some people are not escaping persecution, technically speaking, or conflicts. But nonetheless, they are risking their lives through desert and sea because the situation they left at home was a situation of despair. Migrants, as I was saying before, can offer a lot to the countries where they settle. In fact, they are already offering. You know who is one of the main advocates for more migration in Europe? He is the former president of the organization paying the pensions, paying the pensions to people. Because in Italy, migrants are putting so much more money into the pensions, and they are in fact allowing the system to work. Without the migrants, there would be something like 4 or 5 billion euros less to pay for pensions and social services. Only in Italy, not to talk about the many other contributions they can offer. Again, mirroring what I was talking about in relation to refugees, migrants should be allowed ways to move regularly, to find jobs, The problem here is the fact that in many cases, in countries, for example, like Italy, only if you arrive physically in the country, you can find a job. Only if you arrive physically in the country, you can apply for asylum. And this is the real reason that is pushing people to engage in irregular journeys. We need to find and create a system, which is a major global challenge, but one we need to tackle, create a system that enables people to travel already knowing that they have the possibility to look for a job, for example. And that applies to the resettlement to be given to people who are in need of international protection, to certain numbers, certainly, but also to visas for people who are looking for work. Because then what happens otherwise is that people arrive anyway in Italy, anyway they will be exploited, picking up tomatoes that we eat in our cans, even here in London. And they continue to be exposed to a range of violations along their journey because they are always in an irregular situation. If you regularize this from the outset, you know exactly how many people are allowed in, you know exactly how many arrive every year, and you make sure that their rights are respected along the way.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. This will help us get discovered and keep growing. If you would like to suggest any guests or topics for future episodes, please let us know on our Facebook page, Libya Matters, or tweet us at Libya Matters Pod. This episode was hosted by Marwa Mohammed and myself. It was produced by Tariq Almiri. The people who put it all together are Linda Patumi, Marwa Mohammed, and myself. Our interns are Marion Sozi and Ahmed Mahdi. Libya Matters is made possible by our partnership with International Media Support, IMS. Don't forget to tune in next week for a new episode.